Hello, podcast listeners. This is Rob again, and I'd like to ask you for a favor. As I often say, our mission here at Amplify Process Safety is to save lives by helping companies improve their process safety programs. However, we can only meet our mission by working with more companies, and that's where you come in. If your company needs a PSM audit, or perhaps needs help with a process hazard analysis, or maybe you don't know how to submit an RMP plan to EPA, let us know. These are all things that we can help with. At Amplify Process Safety, we are experts in all aspects of PSM and RMP regulations, including PHAs, mechanical integrity, management of change, and we also have lots of useful knowledge related to NFPA requirements, combustible dust, etc. So if you or someone at your company could use our help or just wants to talk about some things related to process safety, please don't hesitate to reach out. Whenever you want to, you can reach me on my direct line, 207-229-0862. And as I said, if you know of anyone who can use our services, please let us know. Till next time, be safe out there.
Welcome to Amplify Your Process Safety, the podcast that provides the experience and expertise you need when it comes to process safety and risk management. Our hands-on approach will give you the insight needed, whether you're new to industry or process safety, in a role where you interact with aspects of process safety, or an experienced process safety professional. Join us in our mission to protect people, the companies they work for, and the communities where they operate by making process safety knowledge available to all.
Hi, podcast listeners, and welcome back to the Amplify Your Process Safety podcast. I'm Joe, and today I'm here with Molly.
Hello.
Molly, what are we going to talk about in today's episode?
Well, in today's episode, we're going to be discussing a new incident investigation report that was recently issued by the CSB, the Chemical Safety Board, about an incident that happened at the Loy Lang Box Company. This incident happened on April 3rd, 2017, and Loy Lang is located just south of downtown St. Louis, Missouri. So I was very familiar with hearing the news reports when this happened at the time, since I live in St. Louis.
Yep, right in your neck of the woods.
Exactly.
Well, let's just give an overview of kind of what the listener can expect today. Obviously, we wanted to cover this because the CSB just put out this report. We know the incident happened quite some time ago, but there's a lot of good learnings here. So we'll kind of cover some background information, what happened in case you didn't hear about the incident, and then kind of the causes, you know, what kind of failures were going on, what should have been identified before they became issues, things like that. We'll also cover some contributing factors, some elements of the PSM program that are designed to prevent things like this. And then we'll just leave you with some learnings of how you can use this information in your own company, whether you might have a similar process or you could just learn something in general from one of the suggestions here. So hopefully you'll get some good content out of this today. We do also recommend that you check out the report. It's very detailed. It's 96 pages. So very in-depth, right. Lots of diagrams, lots of photos. We like the CSB reports. We think they're, you know, very in-depth and informative. So we invite you to check it out, and we will put a link to it in our episode description so that you can follow up and learn more there.
Right. It's always important to try and learn from others' mistakes instead of repeating them yourselves. So this is an opportunity to do just that.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, let's start with some background. So Loy Lang, as you said, was a company in downtown St. Louis, Missouri. Full name is Loy Lang Box Company, and it's quite old. I think it's been around since the 1800s. Is that what you're remembering too, Molly?
Yeah, it's been around for quite some time.
Yeah, looks like 1897. So, and they moved to that location in 1904. At the time of the incident, they were manufacturing corrugated cardboard. From what we can see in the report, it says that their process was continuous. They had rolls of paper feeding in at the beginning, going through a series of machines, and then the cardboard came out at the end. It did require some heating as part of that process. So that kind of brings us to the area of the process that was involved in this incident. So to produce the heat that they needed, they did have a steam generation system. They've got two steam generators that were a part of that, and they would operate one at a time. And then there was water fed to the steam generators that came from the city water supply. And then they returned condensate from the corrugation process. So that's kind of, in a nutshell, what they were doing at this location. Anything I missed there, Molly, that would be good for background?
No, it was pretty much a fairly simple steam boiler system. So anybody that uses a steam boiler to generate heat for their building or their process could have something very similar.
Okay, so then what happened? What happened during this incident on April 3rd, 2017?
Well, basically, they had a pressure vessel that came apart catastrophically. The bottom head basically ripped off from the rest of the vessel. The bottom head stayed in place. Meanwhile, the entire top section of this vessel was launched out through the roof of the building, sailed a block away, and crashed into another building that was a different company entirely. If you could imagine doing your normal job and all of a sudden a chunk of vessel comes flying through your roof, that's not a good day.
Yep, not a good Monday, that's for sure.
No, indeed. So the incident killed one employee at Loy Lang Box Company and also, unfortunately, killed three people at this other company where the vessel actually landed. In addition to that, shrapnel from the vessel fell apart as it was traversing the city block and caused a lot of other property damage to buildings and cars in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw the photos in the report, especially the one where thankfully no one was in the pickup truck, but a 7-foot piece of pipe that was 1.5 inches wide, you know, had basically speared through a windshield of a pickup truck into the floorboard. So that was pretty crazy. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, having this launched into your business where you're just at work was a very unfortunate event for those who were affected and passed away. It looks like it did launch 520 feet away. So definitely a significant amount of pressure for that to happen. So what happened to cause that launch?
Yeah, so they experienced what's called a BLEVE, a boiling liquid expanding vapor explosion. And this is a type of event that often gets misunderstood or confused. It's a little hard to figure what's going on sometimes. But a BLEVE can happen anytime you've got a liquid that's stored under pressure at a temperature above its normal boiling point. So the liquid doesn't have to be flammable or hazardous by its nature. In fact, this was water, which you don't normally think of as explosive. But a BLEVE is just a phenomenon of physics. So when you're operating a liquid under pressure, the boiling point is elevated. So you can maintain the fluid in a liquid state at a temperature that's higher than its normal boiling point when it's under pressure. And then if you end up with a breach or a leak in the pressure vessel, that drops the pressure down to ambient atmospheric pressure and allows that liquid to instantly boil. And so that liquid changes state and it generates a huge amount of extra volume as it changes to gas. That results in a huge pressure buildup. And you can end up with a small hole in the vessel turning into an explosion just from that transition from liquid to gas. And that's what causes these catastrophic ruptures and launches vessels high into the air and far, far away. So
not to segue too much, that was a good explanation. Is this the same type of, you know, reason that those vessels launched in Philadelphia, the ones that went across the river from the refinery?
I'm not certain, but it's very possible. Okay, oftentimes when you see a vessel launch like that, it is a result of a BLEVE.
All right. Exactly. So that's what a BLEVE is.
Yeah. And one other thing, not only do you get BLEVEs when it's, you know, water or something that you think of as non-hazardous. The other thing to be aware of on a BLEVE is that you could be operating under the maximum allowable working pressure or MAWP. You could have a functioning relief device, but if you have a leak in the tank, you're still going to potentially experience this blevy, even though you were operating at the right pressure and your relief device was installed and working correctly. So it's something to be aware of anytime you've got a liquid under pressure at temperatures above its normal boiling point.
Right, right. So it sounds like in this case, there was something that caused this failure. And so what did the CSB find when they did their investigation?
So one of the main root causes of this incident was corrosion on this vessel. So when you have corrosion on the vessel, it loses strength. It loses metal thickness, and it can no longer contain the pressure that you're intending to operate at. And that's what happened here, is that the vessel was corroded and it developed a weak point and developed a leak, which allowed that pressure to decline and triggered this blevy.
Right. And it sounds like the leak that was most recently identified, I guess, before this was just identified maybe the Friday before, and this happened on a Monday. Is that right?
That's right. So they noticed a leak and they tried to get somebody to come in and repair it, but it was going to take a few days. So they decided, well, it's not too big of a deal. We'll just go on our merry way. And they shut down for the weekend like they normally do, and then started the system back up Monday morning as per normal. Unfortunately, the vessel ripped apart within about an hour of starting up for the day after that leak was identified.
Right. Right. And then so that one was a pretty quick turnaround from identifying something that needed to be fixed and then just continuing with the operation. But it looks like the CSB did also point to a prior leak in that same vessel that was in 2012, so 5 years prior. And that's the part of the report that kind of points to maybe that repair being a significant factor in this. So can you kind of walk us through, what did they find in their report regarding that repair that was done 5 years earlier?
Right. So they had a history of leaks. They had had problems with this vessel and corrosion issues previously. And so in 2012, they hired a company to come in and do a vessel repair. They cut apart a portion of the bottom of the vessel that was heavily corroded and patched it, basically. Unfortunately, the company doing the repair made some mistakes, didn't do it quite like they should have, and that was compounded by the fact that the ASME inspector that should have been overseeing that repair work failed to do their due diligence. They witnessed the hydro test before it was put into service, but they did not look at the actual repair as it was being done or the calculations and the documentation that went along with it. So that repair was not up to snuff. And unfortunately, that led to a weakening of the head of the vessel that created these additional leaks farther down the road.
Right. And then it sounds like there were maybe some other practices in addition to those repair practices that maybe would have contributed to just the elevated amount of corrosion that they were seeing here. Can you walk us through some of their practices at Loy Lang that could have contributed to this incident?
Right. So they should have been monitoring the treatment chemicals to try and keep dissolved oxygen out of the system and minimize corrosion. And they had a company that was overseeing their treatment chemical program. However, when they monitored the concentration of these treatment chemicals, they frequently showed that they were out of range, but they didn't seem to take any action to alleviate that. Additionally, when you've got a boiler system like this, you should be doing routine blowdowns. So in other words, you evacuate some of the liquid out of the low point of the system and clean out some of the debris and the material and make sure that everything flows and you don't have stagnant material to corrode. The recommendations were to do frequent blowdowns, and in fact, a lot of boilers are set up with automated blowdown valves and systems. Unfortunately, this one was manually handled, and Loy Lang did not do their blowdowns as often as they should have, which contributed to the corrosion problems that they experienced.
Right. So a lot of these things point to what would be included in a mechanical integrity program. So wouldn't a mechanical integrity program have, you know, ensured that this would have been prevented through, you know, ensuring proper maintenance?
Good question. Yes, a good mechanical integrity program should have caught this. A MI program would do routine inspections. It would monitor for problems if deficiencies were noted, either these routine leaks or if they noted corrosion during their inspections, they would address it and either take it out of service or ensure that there were interim safeguards implemented before they put it back in service after these deficiencies were noted. Unfortunately, Loy Lang did not have a mechanical integrity program, partly because of the fact that they were a box company. They weren't utilizing any highly hazardous chemicals that fall under the purview of OSHA's PSM regulation or EPA's RMP regulation. So they figured they were just running a boiler. It's just water. What's the big deal? And so they did not follow the typical process safety elements, including a mechanical integrity program, which is unfortunate. Even though companies don't have processes or chemical inventories that rise to the level of requiring compliance with those PSM and RMP standards, they still are under the obligation of providing a safe workplace to their employees. And in fact, one of the citations that Loy Lang received from OSHA as a result of this incident was for failure to comply with what's called the General Duty Clause, which is intended to ensure that you operate a safe workplace. And clearly, they had a fatality. They caused fatalities to people that weren't even their employees. Right. So they did not do their due diligence with regard to that.
Yeah, and I thought that part of the report was interesting where they broke down that, you know, they weren't PSM covered or RMP covered. So they, you know, really didn't think about the requirement of a very formal program for MI. But, you know, even though they didn't have anything highly hazardous in their materials that they were using, you know, they obviously were dealing with a lot of heat and pressure, even if it was water, and it did right. have catastrophic consequences. So I do think the general duty clause there is interesting because it encompasses a lot more industries and processes than RMP and PSM do, especially ones that you wouldn't traditionally think are particularly hazardous. So that exactly. was interesting. And yeah, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, they did get a citation under that as well. So, you know, speaking as well, looking, I guess, at their program, you know, what aspects, if they had put a PSM program in place or like a very robust PSM like program, what could have helped prevent what happened?
Yeah, so they could have had better standard operating procedures. That's one of the elements of PSM, is to have clear explanation, written documentation as to how you should be operating your equipment and doing these routine checks like monitoring for the chemical content, having operating limits and clear explanation on what to do when you exceed those limits. So in other words, if they had done their water tests and realized that the treatment chemical concentrations were out of range, they would have had in their SOPs instructions as to how to fix that and get it back in the proper ranges. Also, they should have had an incident investigation program, which would investigate incidents as well as near misses. So when you have a leaking pressure vessel, that's not a normal situation, and that should have been incorporated in an incident investigation program so that they could identify what the root causes were for these leaks and address them.
Right. Those are both really good points. I want to circle back to the first one that you mentioned about standard operating procedures. One thing that was interesting that the CSB found when they investigated regarding the blowdown practices is, as you mentioned, they weren't doing it as often as they were supposed to. But just to give you kind of a frame of reference on that, it looks like they were supposed to have a blowdown frequency of every 10 to 12 hours. And prior to 2012, it was very irregularly done. And then they did change after that repair to weekly. But I mean, every 10 to 12 hours, very different from weekly. So, you know, part of, as you mentioned, those standard operating procedures would be, and kind of, you know, overlap with the MI program is, you know, these are recommendations based on the process that's happening and the type of vessel that it is. And it just didn't seem like the proper respect was given to, you know, how to safely continue operation here. So that I thought was very interesting.
Right.
How much those timelines differed. And then, yeah, as you mentioned, the no investigation, incident investigation program in place. And that definitely would have looked into some of those previous issues that we talked about before that happened in 2004, where they found an undocumented weld repair. And then in August of 2012, there was a leak. November 2012 is the leak that prompted the repair that we've talked about. So there were definitely opportunities where they could have kind of investigated and fixed some issues before they evolved into this kind of catastrophic event. Yeah, so we mentioned a couple factors here, but we know that there are lots of contributing factors when an incident occurs. You know, kind of like the Swiss cheese model is one that I enjoy because it's a good visual, but there has to be a lot of failures kind of lining up in order to actually allow an event like this to happen. So what were some other contributing factors that they found when they looked into this a little bit further?
Yeah, so some of these get a little into the weeds of the boiler code and the codes adopted by the city of St. Louis, which is where they were located. But some of the things that the CSB identified was the fact that Loy Lang should have registered this pressure vessel with the city of the St. Louis, and that would have triggered inspections. Unfortunately, they did not register that. They did have other pressure vessels in the system registered with the city. So one would hope that perhaps if the city were doing their inspections of those other registered vessels, they might have noticed this one as well. Unfortunately, the city of St. Louis at the time was understaffed and not conducting their routine pressure vessel inspections on schedule. So that was a missed opportunity. And then also, as we've discussed, the repair back in 2012 was not done per code, and the ASME inspectors did not adequately oversee that repair work. So those are just a few of the additional contributing causes that the CSB found that are a little more detailed and maybe less applicable than the fact that they didn't have a mechanical integrity program and some of these other PSM elements.
Right. So when we take a step back and we look at the big picture and we talk about learnings from this, what types of companies could be at risk of something similar to this happening? Because we know that it's not just going to be someone who's doing the exact same thing, making corrugated cardboard. So how
exactly
apply these learnings? What type of companies or industries could be at risk from incidents like this?
So in particular, anybody that has a steam boiler system similar to what they had, which could include not just manufacturing facilities, but also office buildings, schools, and hospitals. Sometimes they maintain their own boilers for their own internal heating systems. Additionally, any company that has a pressure vessel in which they store liquids under pressure at a temperature above the normal boiling point, as I said earlier, that could put them at risk for one of these blovies. And so they need to be aware of that and manage that hazard so that they don't launch a vessel out the roof.
Right. Yeah, we all try to avoid that.
Right. Exactly.
Okay, so what can we learn from this? We've put together our thoughts and we think there are three things that are a good takeaway for you if you're joining us for this episode. So Molly, can you start us off with number one? What can we learn from this incident?
Right. So even if your processes don't have highly hazardous chemicals above a threshold limit that qualifies you for compliance with PSM or RMP standards, you still should utilize those same methods, those same management systems that are part of PSM to ensure that you manage your risks properly and you provide a safe place of employment as required by the General Duty Clause. Both OSHA and EPA have very similar language on a General Duty Clause. So you should be aware of that, even if you don't qualify for full compliance with either of those two programs.
Mm-hmm. Yep, that makes sense. As we pointed out before, you know, just because they were making cardboard and the liquid contained in this was water doesn't mean that they were free from risk of something dangerous happening, and they should have taken the proper precautions to ensure that their stuff was in working order so that, as you said, their employees were provided a safe place of employment. Mm-hmm. All right, so that was takeaway number one. For number two, what can you learn from this? We think, you know, companies need to understand their hazards and analyze the risk of their operations. So they need to manage that by implementing and maintaining, that's a big piece that we talked about a lot, the appropriate safeguards. So, you know, learn from the experience as you're operating, conduct incident investigations. We mentioned before how that was really important, could have helped in this case. And that should include near misses, not just, you know, something actually happening. If you were close to something happening, then, you know, let's look into that as well. Because next time it may not be a near miss. And then also doing something with those recommendations. So, you know, in particular, in this case, we saw there were some cases where after something was identified, they may have increased the frequency of something a little bit, which is good. Definitely it's in the right direction, but you really should be looking at those recommendations, taking them seriously, and letting that reduce, you know, the potential for even more serious incidents.
They had one of their contractors, I think it was their water treatment company, had recommended several times that they should be doing internal inspections of that vessel for corrosion, but they unfortunately failed to follow up on that recommendation.
Right. And then that brings us to number three, and I think this one is a really big deal. Mm-hmm. This, I think, is a learning from a lot of investigations. Mm-hmm. I can think of this being a big learning from Texas City in particular, but certainly other incidents as well. So what is number three? What can we learn from this?
Yeah, it's a phrase that's often used is don't allow normalization of deviation. So in other words, when something goes wrong and nothing bad happens. In other words, they had a leak in this pressure vessel and nothing really came of it. So they just kind of looked the other way. And the next time there was a leak, they're like, yeah, okay, fine. It's not great, but we're not going to worry too much about it. So don't look the other way when there are problems. You need to address them instead of ignoring them. You need to monitor and respond to any leading indicators that you have of problems, such as those near miss incidents that you need to be investigating.
Perfect. Well, that is a wrap, I think. We appreciate you guys joining us today. Like I said before, we will drop a link to the CSB report and we invite you to go check it out. If you've got a comment about anything we talked about this week, or you've got an idea for something you'd like to hear us talk about in the future, we'd love to hear from you, or you can send us a question. And you can also send us a voice message using the link in our episode description, or just write to us in an email at podcast@amplifyconsultants.com. We do love hearing from you. We've actually got a note from a listener here that we wanted to share. She is a chemical engineer who has been in industry for 10 years and says that listening to our podcast on her way to and from work really helped immerse her in the world of process safety and gave her another information source for the basic grounding and a broader field to support her integration into a new and very jargoned world. And it definitely is jargoned. So we're sure she's checked out our PSM acronym episodes. And she says, I wish you all the best for the future from a new safety engineer in the UK. So we appreciate you reaching out to us, listener. Loved hearing from you. Glad you're getting value from this. So if you would like to send us a note as well, we would love hearing from you.
Right. And so, as we mentioned, if you wanted to learn more about process safety topics, as our listener commented, we've got a huge library of other episodes. In particular, if you're interested in mechanical integrity programs, you might check out episode 1 or our PSM Back to Basics Part 6 that provides a more detail on implementation of a mechanical integrity program as part of a PSM system. And finally, our goal at Amplify Process Safety is to save lives by partnering with companies that handle highly hazardous chemicals to create world-class process safety systems. It's our firm belief that these systems will help prevent catastrophic incidents like the one we talked about today. So please don't hesitate to reach out to us if we can help guide you on your process safety journey. Thank you for listening, and until next time, be safe out there.
We appreciate you joining us for this episode of Amplify Your Process Safety. Head to our website, amplifyconsultants.com, to find our show notes and other resources. Thank you for joining us in our mission to ultimately save lives by advancing process safety right here on Amplify Your Process Safety. Until next time.